Oh, no, I just did. Yep, but it was...
Today's program has been brought to you by the International Culinary Center, offering courses that range from classic French techniques in culinary, pastry, and bread baking to Italian studies to management, from culinary technology to food writing, from cake making to wine tasting. For more information, visit internationalculinarycenter.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hello, welcome to We Dig Plants on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Alice Marcus Krieg.
And I'm Carmen DeVito.
And today is our 100th show.
Woo!
100. Nice.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, studio audience.
Congratulations.
Thank you, Jack.
It's our 10th year in business, and this is our 100th show. So Carmen and I, independent of one another, made a list of our top 100 things that we love about gardening and horticulture.
And some of our favorite shows and favorite people.
Yeah, so it's kind of a recap
of our experience here and our experience with horticulture. It's winter. We're kind of in a reflective mood, you know?
Yep.
And I was saying to Alice earlier, when I was trying to put together the list, and like Alice said, we didn't share it with each other because we didn't want to taint the results,
right?
You know? And I realized that I thought a good way to do it maybe was to be like Maria in The Sound of Music.
Oh, no. I hope there's no singing.
I won't sing. But these are some of our favorite things.
It's going to be like a Family Guy episode.
Exactly.
I'll be twirling
on a platform. Anyway, so do you want to start, Alice?
Yes, I will start. This is actually going to be our non sequitur show, I think.
Yes. Bear with us, but you're going to learn about a lot about us during the show.
It's going to be fun. Okay. My top... Well, actually... I don't want to put these in any hierarchical order. It's just a random assortment of favorite things.
Me too. It's not in any
order. These are a few of my favorite things. Okay. One, thistles. I love thistles.
Yes.
I'm happy for thistles. Number two, Carmen DeVito. Happy for Carmen DeVito.
Woo!
And number three, my library of horticultural and art books.
Yes.
Those are my first top three things. Take it away, Carmen.
Okay. Well, mine was very plant heavy. I know I'm going to geek out on the plants a little bit, but I...
No, you never do that.
Never. Either that or compost. but their plants are what made me fall in love with horticulture, you know? And I had to really kind of narrow it down because the list was so massive. But I have to say begonias... You know, that's the Victorian lady in me. Any kind of begonia, I love. And dahlias.
Yeah.
Dahlias, if I could be...
Dahlias are on my list,
dahlias
too.
Dahlias are... They have to be in every garden, I think, you know?
Carmen, tighten up your corset.
That's right. And smell the dahlia. And then also papyrus and jasmine.
Yes.
So I can pretend that winter's never coming.
Exactly.
And like it is, very shortly, we're on the heels of it. So those are up there.
Okay. Abstract landscape paintings. That's
nice.
Very inspirational to me. The National Arboretum in Washington, D.C., because I used to take tours there as a little kid, and that's when I fell in love with azaleas and the, like, kaleidoscope of azalea color.
And while we're on the subject of places, I was incredibly inspired by this 16th century garden or park called Bomarzo. I've spoken about it many times to Alice. Mm-hmm. It's one of the most phenomenal places on earth. And after I went to go see it, it really redefined what a garden could be, you know? And sort of by contrast, and not very far from there, in north of Rome, is the Villa Lante, which is the most Baroque and water. Classical, yep. You know, including water and grottos and mosses and plane trees. That's, you know, that's another place that I found incredibly inspiring and sort of reinvigorating, you know.
The first place of inspiration for me was a spot of lawn in suburban Northern Virginia. This was kind of my, where I like cut my teeth. It was, I think, circa 1974. And it was really my first attempt and success at growing and designing, because there was this abandoned, nasty plot of land that didn't have any grass growing on it. And I took it over. And that was my introduction and my first love. And I was successful at it. And I grew the best patch of grass ever. Right there.
Yeah. I think your dad's pretty proud of you.
Yeah.
That patch of grass turned into.
Exactly.
Yeah. I kind of correspondingly, I love to work with kids and plants. Kids by themselves, I don't really like them that much.
But Carmen, you and I had that motto, no kids in the garden.
But I love one of the joys of having a child for me was going to his school every fall and planting bulbs with his entire class.
Yep.
And then and then coming into the classroom in the spring and giving them some kind of horticulture lesson. It was so amazing to do that. And that's one of the pleasures of having accumulated some knowledge, you know, over these years of working with Alice and to share that with a new and, you know, because sometimes you get bored and, you know, you know the basics. And
right.
So you kind of like ignore
it. You just flow through them so quickly. Right.
So, but to see a young person be excited about a bulb and to know that in 4 months' time after they planted it, they're going to see this gorgeous tall tulip. And they did that.
And that work ethic of instilling, like, if
and
you
waiting,
do this now,
and
then
patience,
this will
know?
Happen in the future. Yeah.
So that's one of my favorite things about horticulture.
Well, correspondingly then, I need to thank, if we're doing a countdown of favorite things, Mary Riley Smith, my first real garden job. She's a garden designer here in the city. Mm-hmm. And her garden at the Cooper Hewitt Museum, which was a wonderful relationship and friendship. Mary Riley Smith.
Yeah. And Tony Smith.
And the Hort Society of New York.
We have to shout out to the Horticultural Society, that venerable, more than 100-year-old institution.
Yep, where Carmen and I met.
Yeah.
And secretly devised our plan for groundworks.
That's right. And Alice is the one, along with Scott Appel, who made me feel so welcome there. You know, Alice told me where the staples were. And
first day.
I had such a lost look on my face. She's like, you need supplies for your desk, don't you? Let me show you where the supply closet is.
And here's the staples book. Good luck.
And that, yes, and that's when I was like, okay, because I was like such a lost lamb there, you know. And Scott Appel, who believed in me and encouraged me from the minute he met me when we were, before, you know.
At Smith and Hawken.
Smith and Hawken. He and I both worked there, and he encouraged me to start lecturing and to start sharing. He's the one that got me the interview at the Horticultural Society. He's been on the show numerous times.
Yeah.
So those of you who listen are familiar with who he is. I describe him as my horticultural mentor.
Yeah.
You know?
I wish you could all see Scott, too, because he's right out of the 19th century.
Yes, he is.
He's such a plant explorer, so to speak. Number 9 on my list is my first public-private built library project that I did, which was in Ocean Hill, Brownsville. And what's remarkable about that is it's not too far from the studio where we sit right now in Bushwick.
But
this garden was installed the year Biggie Smalls died. So every time I hear Biggie, can't choosy, I think of like grading and planting and maintaining that garden in Ocean Hill, Brownsville.
Brooklyn. And that was a challenge.
That
people
was.
Didn't want, Alice really broke ground on a lot of levels, no pun intended. She broke ground in the garden. She broke ground with the program because those libraries were, the buildings were designed.
Yeah, the benefaction never allowed for
gardens. Yet there was usually some outdoor space.
It was on a plot of land.
Yeah.
Right?
And
these
were
the Andrew Carnegie built libraries.
Yeah. And they were beautiful historic buildings. They were, and they needed to have that additional touch, you know, that Alice brought. Alice did everything, you know, fundraised, dug the bulbs,
everything
know.
But build the building.
Yeah. And she also had to, you know, on some days clean up after the residents who didn't always take very good care of the gardens.
Well, in that vein, I'd like to thank and I'm very thankful for all my gardening friends, Pam Ito from the Hort Society, Monica Hanneman from the Hort Society, Sweet Carmen from the Hort Society, Tasha Eikensayer, who's now with National Geo.
That's right.
Allie Fox, our current head gardener, Roland Trisco, one of our great gardeners, Alex Norelli, Kyle Cook, etc. All of our gardening panorama.
People that that have that every day work with us and allow us to make the time to be on the radio.
Yeah.
And allow us to step away from the day-to-day things and stretch and grow
and
ourselves
learn.
And learn and teach us things.
The community.
You know?
Yeah.
A community of gardeners. Well, lest we go too far from the plant kingdom, I'm going to list some plants I love.
Yes.
I love passion vines, passiflora, and I love blood red camellias. I'm going to tell you which one to get so that you can copy me, okay?
Oh, my God.
It's Greensboro red, okay? That's the one you need to get because it's the hottest red. I love, like Alice, I love pink azaleas, but only in the south. I don't think I've ever planted one in the north.
No.
I love Cornus Golden Prairie Fire because my husband's from Kansas and I like to have a little patch of prairie, you know, to remember his heritage. And I love hydrangea Aisha and little lime for being kind of the surprising hydrangea that you don't expect in terms of color and shape. So those, if you choose those plants, you won't be disappointed. They'll be really special.
Okay. And I'll continue the list with milkweed. Is
yes.
one of my favorite plants because of the butterfly and monarch migration.
Yeah.
Another total random thing that I love is tours of Landcraft Nursery
yes.
in February.
Yes.
It's a tropical delight. And Dennis Schrader and his partner, they've been on the show. They are an amazing nursery out on the north end of Long Island. Edible pansies and salad. That's
yes.
an amazing thing. And grass and trees. I'm just thankful in the large sense for grass and trees.
And that we get to work with them every day.
Yeah.
And, you know, when I was thinking about favorite episodes and thinking about how what our show was about, you know, reflecting on what our show was about, I thought that Pearl Fryer, Alice, represented so much of the kind of feeling, you mm-hmm. know, the kind of person and story that we like to tell
community.
On the show.
Yeah.
He is a self-taught gardener and topiarist from Bishopville, North Carolina, right?
South Carolina. Mm-hmm.
And to me, he represents how gardening can transform a person, you know, and an entire community.
Mm-hmm.
And it really represents the best of the stories, I think, that we've told. If I had to pick, like, one person's
mm-hmm.
story,
mm-hmm.
I thought that uh-huh. was great.
Uh-huh. You know? And Joe Lample, who we just had on our last show, that's what his show, Growing in Greener World, highlights. So that would be another one in that same vein.
Yeah, he kind of does. He looks for those kinds of stories, too.
Yeah. Another favorite thing about gardening is the winter trade shows.
Yes.
Mance, which is the Mid-Atlantic show in Baltimore.
Yeah.
The San Francisco Flower Show is really amazing. The Boston show. Carmen and I go to these in the winter just to reflect and kind of see what the trends are and see what's new. And then it's fun to come back and report to all of you listeners what's new and exciting.
Yeah. And we get to we get to be around a lot of men in flannel, and that's really hot as well.
And I'd also like to say, speaking of men in flannel, Jack is producing our show.
Yay!
Jack, the producer, I'm thankful for him.
And he believed in us when we walked in and said, hey, we want to do a gardening show.
We said, hey, here's a shovel. Can we do a show?
Actually, I have to retell this story now that you're giving me the opportunity. And first of all, I'm not wearing flannel, but that's okay.
No, you're wearing a Knicks hat.
I am. And I remember the packages you used to send.
We bribed
Carmen and Alice would send us the sort of the radio pitch idea in the mail, and then one of the packages came with a seed packet, which I thought was the most awesome thing we ever got at the station.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
We know how to woo people.
That's right. And it's been awesome since.
Thank you, Jack.
Okay, another favorite. Crocus. Big purple fat ones that come out in February.
Yeah, Alice converted me to that. I refused to plant crocus, and she She converted me to crocus.
Those beautiful little thin stripes on that fat little leaf. It's beautiful. And forsythia at my birthday. I know it's Brooklyn's plant, forsythia.
Yeah.
And it's ubiquitous. But I have to say, I love it. That color in the you know, in the early spring.
And even though, people usually butcher it.
It's meatball.
Awful shapes. When it's left natural, don't touch it.
No.
Just...
If you feel you want to prune it right after it flowers.
But lightly, not into a ball.
No, naturally. And another favorite thing, and this is getting a little beyond the ornamental plant world, but it's still plant, is seaweed sculptures that Carmen and I made together in Cape Cod with my brother.
Oh, my God.
That was one of our fun.
Yeah.
Like
Earl. That was Hurricane Earl.
Hurricane Earl. And we made seaweed sculptures that were huge.
Yeah. After that big hurricane.
It was so fun to work with plants. Yeah. In that vein.
Aquatic plant. That reminds me, we have not done an aquatic plant show.
That's good.
We need to do that.
Well, that'll be 101 shows.
Yes. Alice and I rented a little. First of all, we went shopping for food for like a month before we're like, we're going to eat
for our 5-day vacation.
<I know. laughs> Then we went there. We'd hardly touched any of the food. We were like on the beach constantly or hiking or going to pottery.
We're really sounding like partners in a different sense now.
And a lot of pottery. Pottery trail.
Okay, back to the list.
Plants, right.
Okay, here's another badass thing that I've done with Carmen. Closing a street to crane soil to the upper echelon of a roof.
Six stories up.
To create a garden. That is a fun task.
And moving that 35,000 pounds of soil.
Yeah.
In 6 hours.
Yep. That was really
fun.
That
was impressive.
And another favorite thing, dirt in my bra at the end of the day.
And mulch, too.
How awesome is that? Some people would say that's disgusting, but they would not be my friends.
No, and it feels really good when you get it out of your bra. It feels when you come home and take a shower and the lather is brown, that's actually really, really refreshing.
When you fall into bed because you're so exhausted and you feel satisfied at the end of the day. That's what I love about gardening.
When you're working in Manhattan
and then you get a subway seat on the ride home because nobody wants to sit next to you.
Or you have to go to a restaurant at lunch and you look like a homeless person because you're so filthy.
And you're carrying your pruners on the subway and you look like a psycho.
Yeah. Nobody messes with you when you have big loppers between your legs.
Okay. Another favorite thing, the Burpee Seed Catalog.
Yeah.
The artwork in that catalog is amazing.
Yeah, and I have to say, the White Flower Farm catalog, we've had them on the show. I always, in my early career, they were kind of inspiring to me. Those pictures, those gardens, I hadn't made very many sophisticated gardens yet, and I was still learning, and I would plaster up, you know, pages from their catalog as
inspiration.
It was inspiration board.
Next to your Sean Cassidy poster.
That's right. No, actually, I didn't like him. Who did I like?
Leif Garrett.
No, I liked Mel Gibson, Mad Max. But I loved their language. It was not just they were not just selling plants. They were selling an entire vision.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
Of things. And Alice and I think really apply that with our clients. We're not just going in and contracting. We're creating worlds for people, you know? And I think that's part of the reason that we've been successful, you know?
Absolutely.
Because we inspire people now. It's kind of, you know, come around full circle.
Yeah.
You know?
Another favorite gardening activity is drinking water from a hose or spraying your head off with a hose water because you're so hot on a rooftop.
Yeah.
That's one of my favorite moments.
Yeah. I hate coiling the hose.
Yeah, I hate that too. That's what we have assistance for.
I never want to do that again.
Okay. And number 25, and then we'll take a break. For me, it's something we can't do anymore because of licensing, but I loved curating music to our Hort shows.
Yeah.
But we have good new music now that we're learning about.
Yeah.
So let's take it away and go to a break.
Stay tuned. There'll be more when we come back.
You're listening to Boy Crazy by Cookies on heritageradionetwork.org.
She's dancing by herself in a mother's summer dress. Oh, kid, she doesn't need your help. She studied art in Spain. Tall boys across her brain. Yeah, tall boys, men, they'll do anything. They sat her in the shade, threw her a parade. All lined up, marching back and forth all day. She's boy crazy.
The International Culinary Center is a proud sponsor. The International Culinary Center is a proud sponsor of the HeritageRadioNetwork.org. The ICC, with locations in New York and California, provide cutting-edge education to future chefs, restaurateurs, and wine professionals. We're proud to claim Dan Barber, Bobby Flay, and David Chang among our honored alumni. This is Dorothy Cann Hamilton from Chef Story. Check out our ICC website at internationalculinarycenter.com.
Hi, welcome back to We Dig Plants. Alice and I are celebrating our 100th episode.
With a bunch of random thoughts.
Just random thoughts. I want to come back with, I like to read a lot. Everybody who knows me well knows that I read a lot. Books made of paper.
no nook for you.
Not yet. Probably this year I'll break down. But so I've read a lot of gardening books. I've read a lot of garden writing. And Alice and I had a show about great ladies of horticulture. I don't know if it was season one or two.
Yeah.
And while we were researching great ladies of horticulture, of which there are many, I discovered Elena Perenyi, who was a writer and an editor, and whose book was called Green Thoughts. And now it's considered a sort of classic of garden literature. And her style was really easy to read. And what I liked about her, the question that she asked and considered in her book was, what has been a woman's place in the garden, you know? And Alice and I kind of banter about this all the time.
Hey, ladies.
So I thought that her essay on the subject was kind of inspiring, and I want to kind of share some of her ideas with you. Eleanor, by way of sort of filling in, she was this kind of wealthy woman, a woman of privilege. She was a diplomat's daughter. She married this Hungarian baron. And then after World War II, she divorced her husband, moved to New York, and in the 1950s was an editor for Harper's Bazaar, which was quite an accomplishment and kind of off the typical path. So she was kind of this working woman, you know, during the time when most women were homemakers. And that's what made her so interesting. And she said something that really stayed with me in my life. She said, women invented horticulture. They're the ones that went out into the fields and forests and domesticated plants while men were still chasing wild beasts.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that statement of hers, you know? And then she said, when men finally turned their eye to horticulture, women got banished to the flower garden, you know? And that's kind of where many of us have remained, you know, in a sense. And I just loved... I love reading about her. I love the opportunity that this show has given me to share, to find these people and to share about them.
Well,
you know?
that's really crazy that was your next thing, because my next number 26 is Beatrix Varand as the garden designer.
Yeah.
And then number 27 is, and like I said, this is a bunch of non sequiturs for me, George Washington's quote of the future of America lay in the fields and the forests of the new world.
Yeah.
So that's crazy that, you know, we were there right in the middle, like, you know.
Yeah. Like I said, Alice and I did not share our notes.
We did not,
you know,
share our notes.
About, we've had some great guests. Not to be all like, you know, feminist boots stomping on the ground, but we've had some great guys on the show too.
Yes.
And one person that I find really inspiring is Noel Kingsbury. We've had him on twice. He's this amazing, internationally recognized plantsman and author. He just brings so much common sense and inspiration to his work. Everybody should read his books.
Yeah.
He can be serious and he can be silly, you know? And anybody who writes a soap opera based on gardening is a genius in my book. Do you know what I mean?
Like,
that means you know your subject
yeah.
so well.
Well, let me then go on to say Pete Udoff.
Yes, I had him on my list. Overlap.
So did I. And his plants.
Yes.
These are the plants that are displayed on the High Line. That's where most.
And Battery Park. Yeah.
We had him on our show via the Battery Park Conservancy.
And he's a design. You know how I describe him, Alice? A one-man design revolution.
Yes,
right?
Absolutely.
He's like, he's changed.
Yep, that whole Dutch Revolution reinvented.
They couldn't do it in 1684. They've done it now.
Exactly. All right, well, I'm going to hop a little far away on the globe, and I'm going to say one of my favorite horticultural things and places is the Limahuli Botanical Garden in Kauai, Hawaii. Yeah. I spent some time there with my great friend Pam Ito from the Hort Society the year of the millennium. That was a really fun trip and very inspirational for me. And then also another thought about Pam and what she's brought horticulturally to me is when she got married, her mother, it's tradition that Japanese Hawaiian brides wear ginger leis. And they gave that lei to me, and that smell of ginger is so unbelievable. And I got to have this lei, and it lasted
amazing.
A long time. That smell
is
unbelievable.
Alice has been talking to me about Hawaii since then, how I should go, and it is parrot.
It's life-changing.
Yeah.
Yep. Another great memory for me, and something I'm thankful for, is the Metro Hort organization. Yes. It's a networking organization here in New York of gardeners and landscape designers, landscape architects, people associated with the industry. When I got started in horticulture 17 years ago here in New York, I sent over 100 resumes when I was in design school at New York Botanic Garden. I sent over 100 resumes to people that were listed in that group, and I got about a 30% feedback, which is
really
darn good.
Before Monster.
Yeah. And before the internet. And I just sent good old-fashioned letters. And I'd say I got several job opportunities out of that. So,
It's a great group. And they have these amazing lectures. If you guys are in the New York area, great speakers.
Uh-huh.
Plantorama every year is one of my favorite things to do. It's fun. You get to sort of hobnob with some garden celebrities and see the plants, you know, the things that people are excited about.
Okay, another overlap on the list. Plantorama.
Yes.
One of my favorite things is going to Plantorama in January at the Brooklyn Botanic Garden, and you get to see this amazing witch hazel border of Arnold's Promise and Jelena. And there's just this huge hedge that's probably 30, 40 feet long. Of this display, and it's one of my favorite things.
And we go whether there's a foot of snow on the ground, or you know, we've gone some winters where it was like balmy, and some winters when it was awful. And my favorite thing to do, as well as you know, to sort of go to lectures and hang out with our buds, is to go into the tropical house in the winter, and to go into the Brooklyn Botanic Gardens desert house,
breathe in that humidity.
Yeah, it feels so good. Because I'm pretty sure that I suffer from seasonal affective disorder.
Yeah,
like, I really miss the light.
Well, I think also, I mean, what we keep kind of talking about is how there is a community of people involved in horticulture in New York City, which is in itself such a weird niche. Because we're not talking financial markets. We're not talking advertising. We're not talking, you know, Fifth Avenue. We're not talking PR, fashion. We're not talking all the like traditional New York industry things. We're talking food. We're talking horticulture. We're talking community, people,
gardens.
And it's all right here in New York. And that's what Heritage Radio is all about.
And people don't, when we tell people from out of town what we do, they're like, where do you garden?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And the thing is, there are so many places to garden here if you want to.
Yeah.
You know, personally or collectively.
Right. I mean, one of my favorite things when I moved to New York and I was feeling a little lost is going to the farmer's market at Union Square. It was like all of a sudden there's this network of people that are all like-minded, you know? And then you get to buy a tomato and bite into it, and all of a sudden you're transported. You're not on a sweaty street corner, you know? You're like in the middle of a field. world, you know, eating this like delicious, wet, juicy little
sunshine balls. Yeah,
it's amazing.
And, you know, back then it was less, not that many people were doing it. CSAs are extremely big right now. And restaurant, what do they call restaurant? RSAs, right?
Yeah.
I belonged to one on the Lower East Side 20 years ago.
Uh-huh.
And it was amazing. I mean, the farmer would come from New Jersey. We would meet at the community center. And he would bring, you know, sometimes we'd be irritated because he had like a really weird assortment of things and you had to be really crazy.
Or too much like kale. Oh,
too much kale. One potato, one tomato, you know. But it was a way to meet people. Horticulture brought us together.
Right.
And we also, before the Lower East Side was completely developed, there were some community gardens. And I had a small plot.
With chickens.
With chickens. And I grew a few things.
Yeah.
You know, and it made me happy. And my very first garden was there in the Lower East Side on my rooftop. I didn't have much money. I used plastic grow pots, but I had pots of sunshine. I had sunflowers. I had echinacea. And I remember one of my most fond memories is me up on the roof. You know, when you have like a small, dark apartment in New York, you crave some outdoor space.
And you would haul haul the hose up the flight of stairs
from my kitchen window,
from your kitchen sink.
And I would and I had a little lounge chair and a piece of AstroTurf. And then the kids in the projects overhead would be like yelling, "Hey, lady! Hey, lady!" You know,
"Hey, lady!
Hey, lady! What you doing? What you doing?" And that's like such a great New York memory for me. You know,
yeah.
What are you growing?
Well, actually, I was thinking also about New York and horticulture, and I was thinking about my dear friend from the Queens Botanical Garden, Susan Lassert. We had her here on the show. That was a great show. Yeah. She wrote a book all about public garden management, and I looked up that book because I wanted to get a quote from her. "Gardens are places of pleasure, spiritual connection, and expression of social value." And I think that really sums up gardening for me in the city and even in the country, like what a garden does in the community and the people that galvanize around that. I think it's a great world. It's a great initiative for us. And to that end, I'm very thankful for New York Botanic Garden and for Brooklyn Botanic Garden as places of resource that we have at our fingertips.
Yeah, that somebody had the foresight more than 100 years ago to set aside that space, you know?
Here's another great quote that I got. This is from a historic gardening book that I have about New World, early American gardens, colonial gardens. "According to English law, in the vacant style, he that hath taketh possession of it and bestoweth culture and husbandry on it owns it," which I think is a great ideology.
And husbandry.
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 Yeah.
Which leads me to one of my favorite things about plants is that they have sex in the open. Okay? Yeah. They're not shy about it.
Nope.
Speaking of husbandry. and we had a great guest a while back. I think it was earlier this year, on the sex life of plants.
Yep.
Because as humans, we're a lot more private about it. You know, we had and we had Paula Gross with, she was an assistant director of the Botanical Gardens at the University of North Carolina in Charlotte. And she talked about some of the weird ways that plants mate.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and some of the weird ways that they try to attract pollinators. It makes, you know, teenagers seem mild and by comparison, you know, they'll just do anything to get pollinated. And that was a really fun episode that stuck with me.
I wish somebody would make a rap video about that.
I'll get my son on it. He likes to write sexy raps.
One of my other favorite plants, Davidia involucrata.
Yes.
They're such amazing, beautiful specimens. They really look like butterflies.
Yes.
You know, in the open air, kind of hovering amongst the trees.
They call it the flower, handkerchief tree.
The handkerchief tree.
It's got these big white...
E.H. Wilson discovered it.
Yeah, and we had show about what was one of our earliest shows was the Plant Explorers, and he was hunting for that specific thing.
Yes.
You know? You know, I love that era of horticulture too, the 18th and 19th century, when people would invest so much, you know, nurseries and governments would invest.
Countries were founded on
it. Yeah, in let's go out there. Let's see what's out there.
Uh-huh.
You know?
Yep. That's what I, that's how I like to think of myself. Let's see what's out there. I love Carmen and my and our gardener's ability to wrap southern magnolia trees and keep them alive along the New York coastline.
Yeah.
We have a garden in Manhattan Beach, which just got devastated by Hurricane Sandy.
Yes.
And these trees, actually, we haven't checked to see how these trees
are doing. I
should
go look down there. They were 12 feet when we planted them,
right,
which was very risky.
And then it was really amazing to wrap them and create these kind of winter sculptures with, you know, burlap.
They look like the three wise men, which is a great thing to put in front of a synagogue.
Okay, moving down the line. Another one of my favorite things is watching summer thunderstorms approach from the Shapiro's rooftop. Now, this is the Shapiro's are one of our clients, and they have this amazing rooftop that is at Union Square. So it's really this wide open space.
360 degree.
So we get to watch these crazy rainstorms come in over Manhattan from New Jersey, and standing up there as you're like baking and you're dehydrated and you're, you know, so hot, and then this thunderstorm is coming right at you and you're like hurrying to get done with your gardening. That's one of my favorite things.
And the Shapiros in general, and some of the amazing people that we wouldn't have had the opportunity to meet, and the places and the views that we've been able to see because of these amazing homes and gardens that we've had the privilege of
working on,
you know, and we have to say, with, you know, with few exceptions, we've worked for amazing people in New York, you know, and
we
the Shapiros are definitely on the top of the list because
and Myra Shapiro, she's a poet, and she's going to be on the show in
this
in
winter,
January.
I mean, she comes up, she is the kind of person you want a garden for. She appreciates every little thing you do.
Yeah. Speaking of passion flower.
That's right.
She wrote a poem about passion flower, and Carmen, that was one of Carmen's early list numbers.
That's right.
Yeah.
And she dedicated the poem to us, which was very surprising and amazing.
Yeah.
You know?
Okay. Moving down the list. Blueberries.
Yeah.
Blueberries are amazing. The plants are amazing. The fruit is amazing. The color in the fall, awesome. Pine forests of Cape Cod. And to be able to sort of try and recreate that in some instances that we've had the opportunity to do with some of our gardens. Planting bayberry, you know, fragrance on top of a roof.
Yeah.
Sometimes we get to excuse ourselves from clients that we know we can't satisfy. That's a good thing.
Yes. Yeah, we've had the, again, non sequitur, but I want to make sure that I include these because we do use them a lot in our gardens. I call them the pompous sisters because I can pretend that I'm in the South American pampas when I plant them. And I love how grasses work on rooftops.
Yeah.
You know, it takes you out of yourself and makes you think you're either at the beach or just somewhere else other than New York City.
Uh-huh.
So the three that I love best is Nasilla tenuissima,
uh-huh,
which is like a Mexican hair grass. Just gorgeous plant. Muhlenbergia capillaris.
Uh-huh.
It's just like amazing glowing plant in the late afternoon. And Pennisetum redhead.
Uh-huh.
Just beautiful, indestructible, you know, forgiving plant.
And good old Miscanthus morning light.
Yes.
You know, just tried and true.
Always there.
Two more favorite plants, moss and lichen.
Yeah.
We scrub these a lot as they grow on patios.
Yeah.
But I love that plant. I love the tenacity of it. To me, it's like New Yorkers, you know, dark, surly, always there. Can't really get rid of it.
You want to touch it.
Infectious.
But you really can't.
Slimy. Sort
a little
of slimy
sometimes. Grows and likes dark places. And when you see it, there's one particular client that has the most perfect specimen growing in a pot of a giant rhododendron. And I would want to go visit that client just to see that moss. See if it was still there.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. And it's there.
The idea of it, you know, when it's drought, summertime, it kind of disappears. And then as soon as the rain and moisture comes with the fall,
there
it comes right back.
All right. So we are at number 50, or at least I am, because I've been talking a lot. And I have to say, my favorite thing is the fact that we have an opportunity on this radio show to talk about gardening and to create such a list with my good friend Carmen.
Thanks, Alice.
That's number 50 for me.
Well, I didn't really number mine. I was very obsessed. I wasn't that organized.
You can tell who the literalist is.
And you know what? Actually, I'm usually the one who's kind of anal. Which is very fun to, you know, I'm also the one that once got a car stuck in the potato patch. So once in a while, I surprise Alice. But I kind of want to end, and I didn't really have 50, but that's okay. I want to end with my parents, because even though they technically really discourage me from gardening, and yeah. They're like, this is not a profession for you.
I didn't send you to NYU for this.
This is crazy, Carmen. Yeah.
Why you do this? Why you got to be diff?
And I have to say, even though their words discourage me, their lifetime of gardening and self-sufficiency and locavorism
yes.
Trickled down
uh-huh.
and really helped me become who I am. Yep. So they're in the top 100 too.
All righty. Thank you. 100 shows.
Thank you. Thank you for listening to We Dig Plants on the Heritage Radio Network. Anything else you want to add, Alice?
No. Happy gardening.
To 100 more.
Yeah! See you next week.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.